It's the WSN podcast, The Three Wise Men. I'm Danny Holbrook alongside Miles Holiday and Nate Garlock. And our special guest this afternoon is football official Jim Epperly. Jim, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you asking me.
Absolutely. So we've been talking about officials the last couple of weeks, and we've got so many questions we want to ask you, and it was Miles' idea to bring an official on. So let's just start out. Miles, you want to talk about the defensive receiver? Because you have a lot of questions about that.
There's a ton of questions, Jim. First and foremost, really thank you for being an official, right? I coached in Ohio. I coached in Michigan. I coached in Tennessee, and I've always tried to figure out, when you guys are at a game, who watches the seeing eye dogs?
Like, so when he said he wanted to bring an official on, the fact that you were like, "Oh, I'll bring a friend of mine," I was like, "This is going to be this is a terrible idea." What are you doing?
He's a very respected man.
I've known Jim a long time. Like, this was, why would you do this to this man?
Just teasing, Jim. Just teasing.
Our response to you would be, why did you call the play that got stuffed on fourth down? You know, we weren't mad when you did that. So
I told you he was going to fire back. I told you.
I love it, Jim. That's great.
Great question, Miles. All right. So I do have a question, because this has been, we've talked about a couple of different things. I think most famously, because it made its way around Facebook and stuff, was the defenseless receiver. Absolutely. It seems like that is something new here in the last year or so that has started to take shape. It seems like it's a very difficult penalty to throw. We've seen incidents where it's, one official says, "Well, that's not how I see it." One says, "That is how I see it." We saw them get together in the one hit in week one and decide to throw the flag. I think a lot of people just don't know that it exists, though, at the high school level now.
Well, I think what you're looking at, and one of the things that people have to understand, is the game of football is evolving. The hits of 20 years ago, where you're ear-holing a guy, or you're hunting somebody down and de-cleating them, those hits are going to be taken out of the game, because they're injury riddled, they're concussion, they lead to lawsuits, they've led to a lot of negative aspects to the game of football. We've all been around the we want kids to participate in sports, and one of the hardest sports to get people to participate in sometimes is football. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons is there's an inherent nature of violence to the game. We want, at least what the parameters of the game, they want the game to still maintain its toughness, but take away things that are not football related. So the defenseless receiver, defenseless player, period. I mean, receiver is what we hear. It's a defenseless player.
That's a good point.
It could be a receiver. It could be a kick catch returner. Mm-hmm. Kid just out of the play, period. And what they're trying to take out of the game is actions that are not part of the game, is what I'm saying. So is it part of the game for a receiver to go up after a pass, go off his fingertips, and then he's in a position where he can't protect himself, and a defender comes in and cleans him out just to inflict punishment? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what they're looking at. We went to a concussion protocol, I think 5 years ago or more, where it was mandated by the legislature, not even by the OHSAA or the NFHS. The two, actually, our game is governed by the NFHS. It's National Federation of High Schools, and they set the rules, and then the states can make adjustments and add things. But the basis comes from the National Federation, and this defenseless player is one that has. And you're seeing it at the pro level, college level.
Right.
It started with the blindside blocks. That's been about 4 years ago, where you see the blindside blocks, and now you see that at the pro level. Well, you don't see it as much at the pro level, but again, they're trying to take it out. Where you see it at the pro level is hits on the quarterback. It's not a whole lot different than the hits on the quarterback. A lot of people say, put a skirt on him. Well, one of the reasons that they are trying to take those away is because, it's a money game at that level. My kids and I paid $100 a seat to watch Joe Burrow play, not Joe Burrow's backup.
That's a good point.
And if Joe Burrow gets hurt because somebody dove and tried to take his knee out when it wasn't a football play, that's costing us money. With the defenseless player, what you're asking about and what I told Danny about was we kind of try and teach our officials to view a situation and try and put it in a category. Okay, so with a defenseless player, we have three letters that our director of officiating development has kind of put together, and those three letters are POW. Okay, and we want that hit to fall into one of those three categories. The P being that he is playing the ball. In other words, if you're going after the football with the receiver and there's contact, that's a different story. Okay, so playing the ball is one of them. The second one is open hands. The O stands for open hands. If I have my hands open and I'm trying to, you know, push that receiver or do something that way, that kind of lessens that blow. And again, that goes with that playing the ball. And then the last one's W. Want to see a wrap. Are you trying to wrap him up? Are you trying to tackle him? Or, as many of you know, and many of you get frustrated watching college defensive backs throw their shoulder at a running back and bounce off of him without wrapping up, and you'll hear him screaming from the sideline, wrap him up. So we're looking at what's a football play. So, you know, you mentioned a play earlier this year, and I'm very familiar with that play because we've discussed it at length. When you slow it down, it looks weird, but did it fit any one of those three categories? Was the defender playing the ball? Did he have open hands? Did he try and wrap up the receiver who was up in the air?
No.
No. So then, therefore, that is a suspect defenseless player call. I mean, some of them are going to call themselves. Some of them, we all know the minute it happens that there ought to be a flag.
Right.
You know, and it's also, you know, besides us, it's on the onus of the coaches to teach your kids to do it the right way. Mm. You know, we can't. One of the things that I found out, and I coached for 35 years, one of the things that I found out was the stronger my kids were and the better they did things, the better it seemed officiating was because we were able to play through things. Mm-hmm. Football's the same way. It's a game of strength and speed. So with that defenseless receiver, defenseless player, period, you know, you think about it, how do you want your defensive back to play that offensive player, or vice versa? It's the same way. You know, if you're in a vulnerable position, how have you been taught to bring them to the ground? Were you taught to bring them to ground by taking your head and sticking your head in the middle of their chest and driving them into the ground? You know, so that's kind of where we are with that defensive player. I hope that answers your question.
The pow really I mean, that really made it very clear, I think, for a lot of people who were, you know, it's arbitrary, right? They feel like it's a in the moment, just kind of how you feel type of situation. But now if you look at it as POW and you look at it with those three things, it really does make a lot of other hits clear when you're like, well, there was that, so there's no flag. There was none of those things. That's why what led to a flag. Like, mm-hmm. it that really does help that.
So when there's a discussion with the officials, like you see it, right, the flag is thrown, and then the white hat gets the guy together, and they're talking. Is that someone that's going on in the conversation? Like, what did you see? Did you see him play the ball? Did you see him with open hands? Did you see him try to rap? Because a lot of times you'll have that really long discussion, right? Is that mm-hmm. what's going on at that time?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, anytime there's a flag or if there are two flags, we are taught to get together and make sure that we're both on the same page.
Okay.
And one of the best ways to question a call, in other words, if there's one flag, if we are looking and we have different keys, I'm an umpire most of the time, so I'm the guy in with the linebackers. And,
okay.
You know, so I have the guards in the center, mostly what they do. Right. Mostly I run for my life.
But. Yeah, I was going to say, you're real quick, right?
Yeah. But so if I happen to throw a flag and one of our other guys is looking at that point of attack area and he questions, like, what I'm throwing it for, he's going to come to me and he'll go, and his first question will be exactly what you said. His first question will be, what did you see? And then he's, you know, I'm going to give him my information. And whatever penalty we have, we do have, just like POW, we have categories that we want to put it in.
Mm-hmm.
There are categories. Is it a hook and turn? Did he play through the receiver? Did he get to the ball early? So again, when you throw that flag, we're looking at, here's the category. Now, what a lot of you guys are doing, and we have the categories, which is great, and this is a discussion we've had, and we've had these discussions a lot with some of our younger officials. It's not black and white.
Right.
There's still judgment involved.
Absolutely.
I mean, all we're doing is giving you parameters, and then you're going to put it in one of those parameters. Now, you may see it at slow motion and go, that's not what it looked like in regular motion. We don't have the benefit of eight officials. We don't have the benefit of replay to make those calls. We need to make that call in the moment at that time. Right. And in the moment at that time, I felt like it fit one of those categories. I had a tripping call on a kickoff in the first game of the season.
Yeah, it was there.
It was a kickoff that went for a touchdown, and I saw tripping. And then what goes for the touchdown, now I'm going, did I see what I thought I saw? Now, luckily, it turned out on tape that it actually was. But most of the time, if we question, we're probably not going to throw a flag. Mm. In fact, we're taught when in doubt, we have a whole list of when in doubts. Because at the beginning of the season, we get three manuals, basically. We get a case book, which has plays in it and certain plays that we would have to go through. We get the rules book, which has the rules. There's 10 categories of the rules. There's rule one through rule 10. And we get, this is an Ohio specific, which is, it's called the gold book, and it's a mechanics book. But in the gold book also we have little helpfuls, like our overtime period is different than the rest of the states. And we have a page that is called when in doubt. Okay, and when it's when in doubt, we're listed. When in doubt, it's not pass interference. When in doubt, it's not a safety, stuff like that. Anytime it's a when in doubt, you don't want to make an effect, okay?
Now, do you guys take those things with you?
We have one on. We have these on the field in a bag somewhere,
right? Just in case.
Well, and coaches can request a conference.
Okay.
Now here's the issue with it. Some coaches want to request a conference all the time to complain about a call.
Sure.
What we have to tell them is this, and you want to word it correctly, coach. We will give you a conference and get a rule book for a misapplication of the rules. However, if it's found that the rule was not misapplied, you are going to be charged a timeout.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's usually when they don't want to talk about it anymore. Sure.
Yeah. So a lot of times what I'm hearing in the crowd and from the public is the inconsistency from one crew to the next. And why I'm bringing that up, it brings my next topic. Do you think because of the shortage of officials, we're rushing guys up to the varsity level? And we laugh about that because, you don't get a lot of experience in junior high and JV, which I think you should. But are we moving guys up too quick?
Possibly, but you also have to think, you say inconsistency. I say that it's differences in philosophies. Rules should be consistently enforced, and that's not an issue. Yeah. But there are some crews that things happen a little quicker or a little slower, or and that's kind of why the 40-second clock came in. Used to be the referee blew the ball ready for play every play, and the time was varying between the time it was down and the time, so the 40-second clock brought that in. So that's that attempt to be more consistent. But, you talk about inconsistent, and sometimes our judgments are what you see is not what I see.
Mm-hmm.
When I work on the sideline, which I'll be doing here in a couple weeks, always want to ask when coach has a question, hey, there's holding. Okay, coach, I'm going to ask you a couple questions. Who's holding? Who got held? And where's it at?
Right, because they just see a hold. Because
you may not be looking at the same thing I'm looking at, and you may not be looking at the others. And if you can't give me those, then you're not trying to work with me.
Yeah.
You're just trying to show me up.
Right. A lot of coaches don't understand, it took me a long time when I was coaching, what official's responsibility is, right? So you might be yelling at the wrong official who that's not his call, correct?
Could be, but if you're on my sideline, then I'm going to be your communicator.
Okay.
So you talk to me, and then I'll talk to whoever that should be looking at that and get that done for you, because it's we're not going to have a great game if you're standing behind me yelling at my, over my shoulder at the guy clear on the other side of the field. Now the game will be okay is if you talk to me and then I go talk to that guy and we'll get things taken care of.
So going back to my original point, what do we have to do to get more officials in the game? Because it is a huge – I mean, we're seeing scheduling being revolving around officials. Well, we're seeing night game versus day game so other crews can get there. This is the worst I've ever seen it as far as the number of officials.
It's a great opportunity for them to sell job on it, right?
Yeah. It's going to get worse before it gets better. I'm 61 years old. I'll be 62 years old. I know of – two crews that within the next 4 years probably will not be available anymore because, you know, one of them has two guys who are 70 on it. You know, it's time.
Right.
I think the landscape has changed a little bit because there are so many things and there are so little reward to it. I mean, when you look at it from a younger person's standpoint, you know, why do I want to go out there on the field and get yelled at by everybody, you know, whether I call it right or call it wrong, and get paid $90 and I have to be on the game site at 5:30 and I don't leave the game site until 10 o'clock.
Oh. Yeah, right. That people don't realize that.
Right. Right. And if I even if I have to drive.
Yeah.
I mean, because we used to work in the track, and usually in the track we would have Toledo Whitmer and Central Catholic, true, which is a great game.
Right.
But we have to leave at 4 o'clock to get up there, and we're not getting back till midnight, and we're getting paid $85-$90 a guy. Now, you know, there are guys that travel, and that's fine. But we live in an area right now where we are a bit of a dearth of officials, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. For example, we're talking about one of our crews, Jeff Klaus's crew, went to six guys. We went to six guys a couple years ago. Well, we haven't been able to work six for quite a while. Jeff's loaning out a guy next week for a crew. He loaned me a guy 1 week because I had a guy who had a rib injury and wasn't able to go. And when somebody has like a family function or something where they have to miss a night, I got one of my guys is going to ACC baseball clinic. He's an umpire in the ACC next weekend. So I'm finding a guy for him. Well, I found a guy who's going to go, who volunteered to go with us next Friday up to Defiance. So around here, you know, it's tough, and we're kind of shifting people around to get into places, and we're giving young guys a chance because there are three young guys in Wapak who have been officiating. And when I say young guys, they're college kids. They're second year of college who started officiating when they were in junior high. So they're, I mean, and they want to work when they can, but one's going to the University of Cincinnati, one's at Dayton, and one's at Findlay. Now, you know, I can't have Kyle coming back from Cincinnati every Friday night to work with us, you know. So, but when he comes back, we take him as a sixth guy, or we take the other young guy as a sixth guy. And I know the kid from Findlay is going to be working tomorrow night or this weekend over in Western Ohio with the crew because he's needed.
Right. So the Ohio wants to have six-man crews, right?
Yeah, and the six-man crew came from the coaches.
Okay.
The coaches were upset about low blocks and holds on the edge. And when we're talking low blocks, we're talking not offense, not just offense, we're talking defense. Mm-hmm. Defense taking out pulling guards like St. Mary's and Marion Local when they run the wing or they run the fullback and you have a linebacker or a defensive back who sees on Saturday or sees on Sunday where that cornerback comes in, shoots their legs out, right, and takes that blocker out. Well, that's illegal in high school. That's a 15-yard block below the waist. And it's either offense or defense that can commit that. And those were happening on the edges, and that's what the coaches wanted. So putting that center judge, that second guy in the backfield, was the reason for that. On a kickoff, he's on the 50-yard line because now we have two officials on the receiver's line in case of onside kicks.
I've always wanted to answer an answer to this question. So I watch officials in baseball, and we know how they handle umpires, how they handle managers, mm-hmm. and they're quick to throw them out. We see it in basketball. How much does it – I mean, you guys do a lot of talking to the coaches on the sidelines. And
the wing guys do.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The wing guys, the sideline guys, because that's kind of your guy.
Yeah.
You know, and the better you are at handling those guys on the sideline, the better, the smoother the game's going to go. And we've always used the – when we teach our young guys and teach our wings, we always use the Patrick Swayze theory. You guys watch
be
roadies.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
Be nice until it's time to not be nice.
The football officials always seem like they handle it. They take more, yeah. but they always handle it. So, I mean, you'll see a flag go up on an unsportsmanlike conduct on a coach every once in a while, but not very often, you know?
Just one.
It's a different – think about your atmospheres with those. Yeah. I mean, the number of calls that are made in a baseball or basketball game – the area involved, the tightness and the emotion and everything like that. Football, one of the things, and the great coaches understand that was one play. I've got to get back in to getting on to this next play. And they're calling a play every 40 seconds. You're not calling a play every 40 seconds in basketball. You know, you're running your offense or whatever. Baseball is, you know, I was a college baseball player. I apologize, but baseball is a slow game.
It is.
I'm going to sneak this in. Go Royals.
Home of the Guardians.
So, yeah, I mean, and there are, just as there is in any walk of life, there are guys who are really good at it on the sideline. There are guys who need some work on the sideline at it. One of the things that you do is you kind of have to take your ego out of it, I guess, is what I want to say. You can't get your feelings hurt because you made a call and they're not happy with it. You want to try and keep an open line of communication, because once that line of communication is gone, then you're really going to have trouble, because the players always take their cues from their coaches. However their coach acts, their player's going to act most of the time. So if you can, you know, if you can handle and control the coaches, then the players are also, you know, that game goes so much better than it would. You know, our biggest thing is we have coaches out there who are very good with the rules and they know the rules. Unfortunately, we also have coaches out there that are not as good with the rules. They watch a lot of Saturday, they watch a lot of Sunday, and that's what the fans are. But we understand that. I mean, fans are going to be fans, whatever you are. And you ask about the dearth of officials, you know, that's another thing. Fan treatment of officials is one of the things that is beyond top. Ask midget programs how much they're paying to get officials to come work for them. Because of, you know, there's a lack of knowledge of the rules. And I'm not saying these people are bad people. But they make bad decisions. They get caught up in it. They make bad decisions, and they, you know, they treat those officials like. And the worst part is for a lot of them, those are the young officials. Those are the guys that haven't had a chance to get up that are doing those so that they can practice and get better. And then when they're getting run off the field by parents and coaches,
right.
I'm glad it's a video, you know, that's screaming at them an entire Sunday afternoon, why do I want to do this on Friday night again?
So what do you think we can do? I mean, obviously, we know that it's a problem and there's a shortage, but if we want high school sports to be able to continue like we know it, we have to find a way of getting the ranks filled back up.
If I had the answer to that question, I wouldn't be sitting here.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. What was attractive to you that got you into officiating?
Well, I didn't start it until I was about 40 years old.
Okay.
So, and what got me into it was I was coaching junior high football with a friend of mine, Ted Endel. Ted and I were coaching, and Ted had just gotten his basketball license to officiate basketball. And he said, why don't we get football officiating license? So took the class, which that has changed a ton because of trying to recruit more people. Then it was you went to 9 hours of classroom. And then you had to do 2 years of JV and under before you could do a varsity game. Now they've done away with the classroom segment. It's all online.
Okay.
Now it's just 1 year. You need to be observed by two Class 1 officials. There's three classes of officials. Class 1, which is varsity. Class 2, which is everything but varsity. And Class 3, which is like high school kids who are officiating. A lot of the schools in Ohio have gone to teaching officiating classes as part of their phys ed curriculum.
Love it.
Yep.
Yeah. Great idea.
It's a great idea. However, that it's not panning out as to those kids going on and doing it once they get out of high school, because they don't get field time during high school, which is really difficult to do. I mean, I've been in a couple. I spoke to Shawnee's classes. Nick Berkey's teaching them. He's doing a phenomenal job because he does like game simulations and has it all written out. Things like that is great. We've taken them to do our midgets a couple times where they've been kind of in a controlled atmosphere where they can see it. But a lot of times they end up going off to college. So, for example, we'll take the young man who's in Cincinnati. He's been given an assigner down there. Well, the assigner keeps assigning him games on days when he's not really available, you know, and making him make a choice between going to a University of Cincinnati football game, which he has season tickets to, or going and doing a junior high afternoon game for $55 or $60. Now, as a college kid, I know what decision I'm making.
Yeah.
I mean,
for sure.
I'm there for the experience. Now, is it a good chance to make some extra money in college? Heck yeah. But, you know, it needs to be something that you desire to do and kind of getting along there. So I would say the average age of a football official in the state of Ohio is over 55.
Wow.
I would guess. It's got to be in the 50s somewhere.
So I'm assuming one of the things you do like, because you mentioned that, you know, you got involved because you had friends that wanted to officiate too, the camaraderie and the group dynamic
Certainly.
Of working with those guys,
certainly.
Right? That's
got to
be.
Working with your friends, I mean, we're on the phone constantly, and not as much my crew, but me and some other guys on different crews discussing rules, discussing plays that we've had, sending plays back and forth, because we honestly do want to do a good job, and they all want to do a good job.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, right? Because everybody always assumes, right, that you guys are just bozos and just show up, don't do any training, right? That's not the case. You guys have meetings throughout the season, right, to work on your craft. And, Jim, you guys really don't care who wins, do you?
A lot of times I can't tell you what the score is.
Exactly. Right.
Oh, I take that back. I know when it's over 30. When one team has 30 more than the other, I do know
How many times a year do you guys evaluate every game after the game? How many meetings do you have to go? I mean, is there still procedure during the season?
High school's not like college and pros. We'll take college, for example, talk with Dr. Denny sometime. He would be a good one for you to talk to about what they go through. But, you know, they're graded every time. They have conference calls during the week to go over calls that they've made, and their calls will be graded on, you know, whether it's a correct call or whether it is a gray area or whether it's an incorrect call. And you don't want gray area or incorrect. You want all correct. For us on Friday nights, you know, you have to understand this is not our one job.
Sure.
You know, some of us, besides having our daytime job, we also have a family with kids of our own that are doing things. So getting a lot of time to review a lot of those things is not a lot of times in the cards. Now, we are required to attend one state interpretation meeting, which is at the beginning of the year, and the coaches are required to also. And then we are required to accumulate four more what are called educational credits. And the way that you gain educational credits is you attend local association rules meetings. So we have a local association here in Lima. We have about 70 officials in it, and we meet four times a year.
Okay.
And so at that meeting, I'm our rules interpreter, so I will do a presentation on a rule and plays, and I will have video, and we'll go through video, and we'll look at it and say, okay, you know, here's what we looked at. What do you think? What category does it go into? What would be the enforcements? And then we'll branch off of it. What if this would have happened? How do you handle this? We try and do things that are more commonplace instead of the odd ruling that you'll run into once in a lifetime. You know, I've been officiating 24 years, and how many times I've called tripping Danny?
Not very often.
Once.
And it was the game
and
I
when,
had.
When I threw the flag, I went, that almost looked like a leg whip. And I'm like, I'm really going to throw the flag. And I threw it, and, you know, and I, when I went to Carl, I said, you're going to love this, but this is what I have. What we're trying to get is try and get the regular play and get regular things and not make mistakes on enforcements and things like that. Judgment will always have its barrel of where you see it differently than I see it. Mm-hmm. But if it's a 10-yard penalty and you give them 5 yards on it, that's human. That's an error that needs to be corrected.
Let me ask you about a play that took place a couple weeks ago. It was all over social media. Did you see the field goal between Tenora and Archbold at the end of the game? Barely did it go over the crossbar?
We did see it, and yeah. we discussed it last night at our rules meeting. They put it up. They put it up and talked about it. And again, we're on our side. I mean, we're always, you guys remember Doug Foley. Doug was a coach for a long time. Then he got his football officiating license, and he made a complaint one night to me. And I said, you have to understand one thing. Doug, you're either one of them or one of us.
Cutthroat.
So when we discuss, okay, we are going to support the call that's made.
Sure.
By them, but we are going to try and learn if we see that that there was a mistake or that it was an incorrect call as to how not to do that again.
Right.
So we talked about positioning under the goalposts.
Yeah.
One of the things that we talked about was when we look on the film, we see lots of people in the area of the goalposts. Why do we have kids and people that close? Mm-hmm. Could be a distraction to you. Are you standing directly under the bar? You know, can you see the bar? Did you follow the football all the way across the bar? You know, things like that so you can...
So what is the correct positioning? Because I always thought, even watching games, it's bizarre that you have to look up through the upright to see if it goes through. I just think if you're off to the side to get a better angle...
Do I get that one that's above me?
Right. Good point, right? Right.
Yeah, I'm at a vector.
Right. Hey, I think you should just run a net because if it goes through the goalpost, it hits the net. It's good, right? But that's my thought. What is the best positioning?
I will stand directly under the crossbar.
Okay.
And, you know, so that I've got it right here. I'm going to watch the ball come up, and I got it right here, and I can turn and pivot and look, and then I can see does the ball cross under me or above me.
Okay.
Some guys will step back a step. So either way, we are on the cross. We are on the
upright.
The upright and the crossbar. And we're looking for, you know, where does that ball cross?
Let me ask you this. When you guys see a call that you know is not the right call, and you guys get together, because you have a good crew, mm-hmm. and you guys get together, how tough is that to go to your buddies and say, look, I saw it differently. I'm telling you that was the wrong call. How do you do it? I guess that's a better question.
Okay, so first of all, we talk about approach, okay? We are all proud to be what we are. And when you come running at me and say that's the wrong call,
I think about that all the time.
Drumming up my defensive nature. So we go back to the discussion we had earlier when you guys were asking about the defenseless player. I'm going to come into you and I'm going to go, Danny, what did you see? What do you have here? And you're going to tell me what you had. And I'm going to say, this is what I saw. If you're adamant and you and I cannot agree,
we're going to stay with your call.
Then our white hat's going to make the decision, and we're probably going to stay with your call. You know, and one of the things we don't ever want to do, and we've been guilty of it in the past, and we've worked hard on it, is we don't want to argue on the field. We may cuss each other out and throw crap in the locker room at each other and stuff like that. But on the field, somebody's going to make a call. And in most cases, what's going to happen is if you believe that you had the right call, then you're the one that's going to live with it. Now, the unfortunate thing is the other four of us are also going to take the brunt of whether you made the right or wrong call. I mean, it's a camaraderie. Nobody goes and looks at the crew and goes, he was a great official. Those other four guys are terrible. You all are terrible or you all are pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're kind of, it's like you're all the captain of the ship, and if it sinks, y'all are going with it.
So one of the worst things about coaching, you go to a party, right, and people would always ask questions. Hey, what would you do here? What would you, what'd you think of that? Is it the same thing with officials? Like people find out you're at a party watching a game, and they find out you're an official, and then they just start peppering you with questions?
Like, yeah. Will you come on our podcast so we can ask you these questions?
Right. So, Miles is like, you got a guy? And I got a guy. But he's going to bring it, I'm telling you.
They'll ask. I mean, it's like anything else. And, they'll ask you what game you had and if there's somebody that's spectacular in that game or whatever. I've been very fortunate to do, numerous state finals, numerous semifinals, and had plenty of guys that are in the NFL now or played at Division I that on the field with. And that's kind of one of the things that was really cool. One of the ones that I remember, Zach Boren was really, he would, when we had him, he was playing middle linebacker at that time. And the team they were playing was running toss sweep and pulling the play side guard. And he's shooting the gap from 8 yards deep and making a tackle for a loss on that play, and that's special.
Yeah, it is.
But he did come out in the second half, and he looks at me and goes, hey, if you could see your way just giving us one call, we could, I could get tickets or something for you. just kidding around. I mean, he said, that's like, no, dude, we can't.
He took him up on it.
Yeah, no. Said, dude, we can't do that. Braxton Miller was probably one of the fastest I had ever seen. We had them versus Cincinnati Elder when he was a junior down in the pit, which is if you've never been to a game there, go, because it's phenomenal atmosphere.
Elder Purple Panthers,
He ran that zone read, and the linebacker in front of me, who was going to Indiana at the time, took a step to his left, and he pulled it out and went right 66 yards, and it was the fastest thing I had ever seen.
Nice.
Wow. So a lot of those things. We had Menor and St. Ignatius when Trubisky was a senior, okay. And that game was 57-55 in triple overtime.
Wow.
And some of that stuff is very fortunate. We have wonderful football around here, not quite at that Division I level. I mean, that's a real special, and you'll see that with what you have this Friday night. But that's a real special thing that we don't quite get to see around here, that size and speed of athlete. But what we have around here are really, really well fundamentally sound kids, kids that do it the right way. And, they play hard and they're respectful. And, it's been a good experience for me.
That's who's your all-time favorite player that you watch and you were like, this kid is just amazing? I know you talk about Braxton Miller and Boren and some of those guys.
As far as, I mean, when I was officiating?
Yeah.
I tell you, the one that was the most fun that I still laugh about this today was a kid from Crestview who played for Ball State, and his name's Osborne.
Yeah,
Briggs
yeah,
Osborne.
Yeah.
Because I can still remember it vividly because I laughed so darn hard. He came through the line. They were playing. I think they were playing Spencerville, and we were up there. And, he's a really good running back. And he comes through the line, and the middle linebacker just belts him. I mean, wraps him up and drives him to the ground. And the whole time going down, he's yelling about how great that hit was. And he jumps up and he goes, gives him five and goes, that's a great hit, and goes back to the huddle. And I'm like, that kid's having fun. That's one of the fun, because most kids, when they get popped, they want to go back. And he's giving this kid all the props in the world. It's still one of the funniest lines I've ever heard from a kid. When he did that. And so, that would be one that sticks out in my mind. I mean, there's been great players. They're just too numerous to count.
Yeah.
And the great games. you know, they to triple overtime. Menor and had Menor and Moeller in the Division One final in 13, and it was 55-52.
That and was, you had that game?
Yeah, we had that game.
Wow. That would be awesome.
I was fortunate enough to be on that game, yeah. So, you know, and all around. And we used to travel up to Cleveland and do games. We don't travel as much anymore in the playoffs. OHSAA wants to kind of limit the traveling expense because in the playoffs we get paid mileage. So we get a little bit of a bonus when we do playoff games and things like that. So,
well, Jim, we really appreciate you coming
this
in
was
today.
Awesome.
Yeah, I could sit here all night and talk. This is awesome. But we really appreciate you coming in.
Dude, no problem. I appreciate you asking me, and I hope that I answered the questions that you had and got through what you needed, because I have a tendency to be long-winded once in a while.
It's okay. We're on Danny a lot.
Yeah.
Every time I hear Jim Epperle, I'm going to think of POW from now on, right?
Yeah. Oh, don't do
and
that.
And he's still going to complain about every call he ever sees. So, yeah.
Jim Epperle. You guys on your broadcasts, you can do that. And do me one favor.
Sure.
Okay, and this is what I do with my officials in our rules meetings and stuff. There is no such foul as offsides in high school.
Encroachment.
It's encroachment.
All right.
Hey, guys, I get it in the hallways every week. If I'm doing good or bad, I get it, and I love it because I seek him out. This is my mentor.
Thanks a lot, Coach. Yep. Really
thank you, guys. I appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, Jim. Mm-hmm. Charles River, dedicated to improving life by discovering new therapies and cures for devastating diseases. We are a strong supporter of our local community as well as educational opportunities in science, technology, engineering, and math throughout Allen County region. Learn more about Charles River at criver.com. Hulker Drywall and Plastering. Hulker Drywall is a family-owned company that is focused on giving every customer the personal attention that they deserve. Utilizing a local workforce, Hulker Drywall is dedicated to bringing a professional atmosphere to any commercial or residential job site and is committed to a safe working environment for its employees and customers.
What a great interview with Jim Epperle, official here in Northwest Ohio. Just a fantastic job. And, man, I learned a lot, guys. There was a lot of stuff to unpack there, and he did a great job of helping us out.
Pow! That was amazing,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
It clears up a lot.
It really does.
All right, guys, let's do the Diamond Dave Bowen best thing we saw all week. I love that intro, Miles. I'm glad you put that on there. Dave Bowen, one of our best friends at WSN, and it is the Diamond Dave Bowen best thing we saw all week.
Yeah, because Dave said there's so many, right? So let's right? make it best things. Yeah. Ken Schreiner, 200 wins at OG, got it last week. Congratulations on that. What a great career. They've averaged like 7 wins a year since he took over, I want to say in 96. So that's a great thing to see. The atmosphere at Bath when I was there last Friday. I was there a couple years ago, and it was a little bit of a ghost town going into a game, right? Mm-hmm. Not the case now, man. They had a tailgate party. I was there an hour and a half before kickoff, and everybody in Bath was there getting ready for the game. It was fantastic. So good to see the people in Bath. Jack Rader, have you seen this guy play for Bath?
He's really good.
Oh, my Lord, number 99. He is a dude. Had the huge sack to seal the victory for them Friday night. He was outstanding. Tenora Volleyball, if you guys get a chance to watch them play volleyball, it's kind of fun because it's old school. They're going to set the middle hitter. They got two giant middles, and they're just going to pound the middle all night long. Kind of old school volleyball, fun to see, right? But one of the other things I saw that was fantastic this week, I called the Albion and Bluffton college football game this past Saturday. Here's an old name for LCC people, Evan Unruh. Remember Evan?
He came
in as the second quarterback for Bluffton. They're still kind of battling, figuring out who's going to be the quarterback. I'm here to tell you, Coach Nardo, it should be Evan Unruh. Give him the job. He was fantastic running their offense for the Beavers.
Nate, the best thing you saw all week?
Yeah, so I'm kind of piggybacking off of your Bath love, man. That Bath win over Kenton, what a huge victory that was for them. They moved to 3-0 in the Western Buckeye League for the first time since 1999. That is a different style of team. I saw them a couple of weeks ago against Shawnee, and I was sold. Their receivers are big. Ooh, the quarterback is so good. This is a different Bath Wildcat team. Is. Coach Russell has done a fantastic job with them. So it was good to see that win out of them. Boog Wilson from Lima Senior.
Yeah.
The passing offense over at Lima Senior right now is the number one in the state. Yeah. Boog Wilson is leading all receivers, no matter what division, in receiving. Fellas, he is averaging
225 yards a game in total offense.
That's craziness, isn't
it? It is insane what he is doing right now. 68 of Lima Senior's 176 points have come from Boog Wilson. Whoa. He has almost half of their offense has been him alone. What he's doing is fantastic. And I'll tell you what, if he keeps up with this pace, you're going to be talking about Boog Wilson in the running for Mr. Ohio football. And I don't know if that's ever happened in this area. Like, I mean, what he's doing right now is just, it's record setting. It's so good. And one more for me from football. Wapak gets the win over St. Mary's.
Big win.
It was a great thing. That's not the greatest thing, though, okay? My great thing is that Wapak got that victory with only having 9 minutes and 9 seconds of time of possession. St. Mary's had 33 minutes of time of possession. Wapak got the ball for 9 minutes, and they still won 28-14. That is phenomenal. Well, they had some quick strikes. Yeah. They scored an 80-yard right out of the gate. They had a kick return down to the three. But you win the game. And you barely touched the ball. It was fantastic. And outside the football world, I could give a shout out to my Lima Senior soccer team. Assistant coach on that team got a big victory the other night against Spencerville. We shut them out 4-0. First time we've beaten them in a while.
Kicking awesome. It. So, kicking yeah. it. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. What are you doing? Why? Like everything cool I just said, you had to go and ruin.
I'm kicking it because it's soccer.
Yeah. No, we got it.
Oh. I get a kick out of soccer. Oh I see gosh, what you did. Hey, I just got news. Boog just scored again against Northview.
Yes.
Well, and now, you know, things, they get into that TCAL schedule starting this week as well. I got a feeling.
Not the track.
Bowser comes in.
Yeah, not the track. It's the TCAL. And I got a feeling that we're going to continue to see Boog score every 3 seconds. Yeah. So.
Fellas, I had a great game this weekend. We joked about me going back to Waynesfield to where I work.
We weren't joking. It was serious.
Waynesfield Hardin Northern was a fantastic game. 21-20. Hardin Northern wins it. They score with a minute 10 or so to go. Waynesfield drives down the field. They get stopped on fourth and whatever from about the 15-yard line. But not only that, guys, the reception we got when we got there, because we had not been there in a long time, and we went in there, and these people, they – look, the PA announcer said, hey, WSN is here tonight. They started clapping for us. I mean, really? They were so excited that we were there.
I've been there recently. They didn't clap when I was there.
Hometown
guy. I think it's a Danny Holbrook thing.
But,
Danny Holbrook is here.
Nathan Swaney, the athletic director, Josh Spencer, the high school principal, they treated us like kings. The community was so excited for us. They didn't get the win, but guys, if you get a chance to go down there and do a football game.
It was you and Gilly today.
Darren Gilbert,
right? Did he scare anybody?
He did. He scared small children.
Hey, listen, I've said it several times. You guys have heard me. There's big time, and then there's Danny Holbrook calling a Waynesville Goshen big time. Those are two different worlds.
Brought to you by Lee's.
That's fantastic.
Stuff. That's real good stuff, guys. All right, let's do this. Let's take a look at Week 5 matchups on WOSN. Guys, we got some great games. I'm so excited. I love this segment. Let's start with you, Miles. Game 1, Bath at Elida, the 3-1 Wildcats. We've already talked about the rejuvenation of that program, taking on Elida. Look, Elida's really down right now. You know this is a rivalry game. It's crosstown kids. They all know each other. Some of them are related to each other. Randy Roberts and you, Miles Holiday, on the call for this game.
Yeah, excited to get Bath and Elida. What a great rivalry. One of the best rivalries in the area, right? But you brought it up, Danny. It is a little bit befuddling, this Elida team. If you would have told me they'd be 1-3 at this time, I would say, well, what happened? Right.
Right.
This can't score points, and you're wondering, why can't they score points? They got talent on that side. Amari Wash, you got to get him the football. And you look at Bath, Danny, they score points in bunches, don't they? It's crazy how easy they can score the football. Why? You hit it, right? Jake Welsh, the quarterback, is fantastic. Had him last week. What he does with his legs, extending plays, is fantastic. But he's not a quarterback that will just take off and run with it. He keeps his eyes up, right? Mm-hmm. He buys extra time, keeps his eyes up. But Mikey Hale, what a great running back for him, for them. This is a very explosive team. But do they play defense at Bath, right? That's the thing.
That's the only real question they still have to answer, whether or not that defense will hold up.
They did. Second half last week against Kenton, they played a much better defense. They said, we're going to lock up, play man, and we're going to bring Kennard on some blitzes. And I thought they found a little bit of a formula there, mm-hmm. being aggressive. If I'm Bath, I move forward doing that. And then don't forget about our guy, right? the Grim Reaper Elida. Yeah. Now, I thought it was real interesting what OG did last week. Did you see what they said?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to run the opposite side. You put Parker Krim here, we're going to call it on the line of scrimmage, we're going to run left. You wonder if Bath is going to do something similar.
Yeah, you know, this is going to be a great game. And, you know, I had a chance to talk to Zach Welsh earlier this week, and, you know, he said that the team that he looks forward to playing the most is Elida. And the environment that he enjoys playing the most in when he is not at home is at Elida. He is ready to go for this game. And with what he's been putting up so far this year, coming off another 300-plus game this past week against Kenton, you know, I think that he is poised to have a huge game. I said it earlier in the season, you know, as Ryan Magoo goes, the Elida Bulldogs go. And that really is holding true as Ryan has really struggled over the last couple of weeks. He hasn't found that rhythm and that touch that we saw him have last year. Don't know if it's lingering effects from the injury last year or just, you know, he's not having as much time or what's going on. He just doesn't look like the same quarterback that we saw last year when they were hitting it on all strides. So we'll see. If they can get Ryan Magoo righted and he can start throwing the ball, we know that there are weapons, like you just said, that they can run the ball, they can throw the ball. Ryan has a great touch on the football. That's going to be the key, though, whether or not Coach Harmon can get Ryan Magoo right and get Elida back on back on the right track.
The one thing that I really do like about Zach Welch, other than him moving his legs around right and creating extra time, he understands his receivers. He's got big receivers outside, so where does he throw it? He puts it in spots where they can only go get it, right? Yep. He does a great job of throwing a ball in a catchable spot for his receivers.
Yeah, and you look at this matchup, fellas, and look, I'm not putting down past coaching administrations at Bath, but tell me coaching doesn't matter. This guy's brought, you talk about changing the culture and rejuvenating a program. You said it best. Not just the program, Miles, the community.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody's on board with this guy.
100%.
And look, I've got Bath Wapakoneta in a few weeks. I'm telling you guys, they're going to go into that Wapak game undefeated in the WBL. And I don't know that they can beat Wapakoneta, but they're going to play a factor in deciding who wins the
score.
Listen, I can tell you this much, Danny. Yeah. Their offense can beat Wapak. It's whether or not that
their defense
can hold Wapak. Offense will be up for that task.
But one thing that they'd love to do there, too, is the motion hail out. And I would caution them from doing that because as a defensive coordinator, right, when Hale's in the backfield, I'm terrified because he could go left, he could go right. They're going to hand the ball off to him, right? If they motion him out and he goes all the way to the sideline, I know where he's going to get the football. Right? They'll take a look. If there's nothing open, they'll dump it out to him. Now I've got him corralled against that sideline, which I can use as a defender.
Yeah, he's a difficult one to try to scheme against. But, you know, they have three guys currently in the top 10 in the Western Buckeye League in receiving.
Yeah.
Mikey Hale was in there prior to this past week. He's just on the outside looking in. When he gets the ball in his hands, even as a receiver, he's crazy dangerous.
It plays a lot bigger than 157.
Yeah.
Van Wert goes to Wapakoneta. Patrick Kamler and Jerry Snodgrass on the call. Wapakoneta takes down St. Mary's last week. They separate themselves from the rest of the league. Look, Van Wert, they've got a lot of rebuilding to do. They lost a lot of really good players a couple years ago. Any chance they compete with Wapakoneta this weekend?
You know, it's hard because what Van Wert team are we going to get?
Week
one and week two, this was a Van Wert team that looked every bit as good and explosive offensively as they did last year. Because that was the big question. You graduated 11 starters on offense, 10 on defense. They had been through that before, and they had been okay. Was this team going to reload, or were they in a rebuild? Well, weeks one and week two, 48 points, 37 points the next week. Hey, we're in a reload. This is great. Back-to-back weeks now, though, of only being held to 14 points. If this offense can't get going and they're going to struggle. Briston Wise hasn't been able to put up the type of numbers that we're seeing. Micah Cowan finally looked human last week after putting up 27 catches for over 300 yards in back-to-back weeks. He's held to 4 catches for 35 yards. If this offense is starting to sputter, they're not going to be able to hang with Wapak. Now, if they can find their footing and they can get back to doing what they do so well, throwing the ball over the top, putting up those big yardage games, they can stay in it. And I think that's going to be the recipe. If any team in the Western Buckeye League wants to try to beat Wapak this year, it's going to be, can we win a shootout?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah,
I don't know if anybody in the Western Buckeye League is built for that because, like we already talked about, was, you know, Wapak held the ball for 9 minutes and still managed to beat St. Mary's. Like, they know they have big play potential. Their numbers don't look gaudy,
but it's because they're efficient. Caleb Moyer is throwing 9 passes a game, completing 7 of them for 180 yards and 3 touchdowns, right? Like these, that's efficiency, and that's why they're winning. And I, you know, right now, Walpuck is the class of the WBL.
I would agree with that. You did reference the first week when Van Wert got a win over, I would say, be careful. That's a really bad Bryan team that they beat, right? Yeah. So it's tough to get any kind of gauge off of that. Now, Coach Recker, he's got to be scratching his head. He's a defensive guy, and you take a look at how many points they're given. You could say, Danny, though, they are improving. 3 weeks ago, gave up 43. 2 weeks ago, 42. Last week, only 41. So they are getting better, right?
Man, that's a glass half full guy right there.
He's not listening to this podcast.
He won't be anymore.
Thanks a lot. Hey, Coach does a great job there, but yeah, it's going to be a tough ask because you're giving up all kinds of points. Nate talked about how great they can be on offense, number 2 in the WBL offensively, but you take a look at the defensive stats, dead last, right? That is a bad formula going against a very powerful Wapakoneta team. The only chance is if Briston Weiss, as Nate said, goes crazy, right? It's going to have to be better than 11 of 21 for 108 and an interception that he had last week. But he is a dual threat guy, 23 carries for 100 yards last week. If he can go crazy, they can stay in this football game, get to the second half. But I think it's going to be a tough time. Caleb Moyer, right? The quarterback.
That's really good, yeah.
When are we going to start talking about him as one of the best in Northwest Ohio, right? I don't think he gets the attempts, but that's exactly why, because he's
not putting up 500 yards a game, but it's because that's not what they need. Nope. He's so efficient. It's crazy his efficiency and how much he gets overlooked.
But I'm telling you right now, that kid for my money is the best third and whatever quarterback. He is magic on third down. I love the way they do things. I love the way his dad runs that whole program over there. They just reload every year. They are so good at putting people in spots. They lose really – look, they lost Joey Truesdale last year, who was a fantastic linebacker, and they just reload. They just put another kid in. But you know what they do in the offseason? They work.
They sure do.
They work hard. They get in the weight room. They get 50, 60, 70 kids in there, and that's the way it gets done.
Danny, Travis Moyer does a great job with their mindset, right? Yeah. Going for 4 WBLs in a row, and he just says, well, this is just another step, right? Yeah. Oh, we won Friday. Okay, next week's going to be another step. But it does help to have a guy by the name of Grant Hauser, one of the best tight ends in Ohio, right?
Yep.
Watch a little bit of that game last week. Of course, everybody gets recruited as a tight end because you catch the football, right? Much better blocker than I anticipated. He is a dude at the tight end position.
Miles, game 3, Coldwater at Minster. Diamond Dave Bowen and Jack McGuire on the call. Look, there's a couple games in the MAC that are really good this week. For my money, this may be the game of the week. Both these squads undefeated. I like to say this is for second place, but you never know. You never know. Coldwater, Minster, look, they've got a shot. That's all I'm going to say. But they play each other this week.
This is really tight, right? Because you look at Coldwater, they're going to score over 30, right? You look at Minster, they're probably going to score over 30 as well. You look at them defensively, Coldwater only gives up about 10. Minster only gives up about 14 a game. So you go common opponent. Well, let's look at Anna. They played each other. 41-14, 41-14, right? So it's really tough to try to figure out who's going to win this one, but I'd like Coldwater because Braylon Blockberger, the guy is so good. He just completes passes. That's all he does, just completes passes. And Mason Welch is a huge target for
him. Do you guys know this in doing my prep? I looked at the last couple of years. They haven't played each other in 2 years. I just think these kids have not hit each other in 2 years.
Which is weird because when I started watching or doing the same thing, I don't know if I just never knew. I don't know if I forgot. I didn't even realize that the MAC doesn't play everybody every year.
I didn't either, right.
I was taken aback by that. But listen, this, for my money, is going to be the game of the year so far.
Yeah,
I think this is a conference eliminator game. Whoever loses this game is done because it's going to take an undefeated record to win the MAC.
You have to go undefeated, right?
And I picked Minster. They are my prediction to win the MAC this year. I think that they have some unfinished business. Brogan Steffi had an injury last year
that cost him. He's such a good athlete.
He is coming off of a 5-touchdown game. Mm-hmm. He is leading the MAC in rushing. Okay, his running back is top 5. They can run the ball. They move the ball. Numbers are incredible, but they're also only playing a half of football most Friday nights. I think that this Minster team is legitimate. I think that they are for real. I think that they are getting overlooked a little bit, and I think they're going to lean on that going into this Coldwater game. I agree with you. Blockberger is phenomenal. He is such a good athlete. But you're talking about Brogan Steffi, who is leading the conference. He's the top quarterback, top rusher. I mean, he is right now
the standard for the MAC at the quarterback position.
For my money, I think he's the best athlete in the MAC, football, basketball, every sport he plays.
Well, it's going to be important that his guys up front identify who the blitzer is, because we know Coldwater loves to be a three front and then bring people, right? And they'll even include Mason Welch, who led them in tackles last year from the safety position, to come fly up. So if they can figure out who's coming as a secondary blitzer from Coldwater and they can allow him to get out to the perimeter, that's their shot, right?
Well, I know you were talking about over 30 a game. I think it's going to be the defense that settled this one. I think that you're talking about a Coldwater team that only gives up 127 yards a game.
Right.
These defenses are phenomenal. I think this one comes down to what defense ends up with the more timely stop. And I think we could be looking at a low scoring defensive battle.
Well, third down's going to be huge then. Yep.
Well, if you don't like that, guys, in the MAC, all you got to do is look where Garrett Seawright and Mark Shine are going to be calling the game. New Bremen at Marion Local. It doesn't get much bigger than that. Both these squads, unbelievable. Everybody knows the history of Marion Local. Any chance for New Bremen this weekend?
So you guys said that not everybody plays each other in the MAC, right? Can you request that? Can we not have Marion Local?
That's what we kind of joked when I heard that. I was talking to a friend. We kind of joked that, like, they just don't want to have to play Marion Local every year.
Who wants to, right? What a monster. 71-0 last week over DSJ. Danny, they have only given up 15 points all year. Now, you say New Bremen, you championed them last week, how good they are defensively. And it's true, right? They're really good. They've only given up 31 points all year long, but they just have a tough time scoring the football. I think that's going to be a big problem. Might be one of those games, Nate, that it's at halftime, it's a little bit close, but Marion Local is going to be able to score some
points.
And
it's at Marion Local, too.
Yeah,
I mean, I really like this New Bremen team. I think come tournament time, you're going to see a heck of a run out of the Cardinals. I talked about them last week. I did like them. They came within a two-point conversion away from knocking off Versailles.
Right.
They were in that game, but you're right. They do not score very many points.
Nope.
And you guys know what the record right now for Marion Local New Bremen is all time? They played 50 times.
40-10.
45-5.
Ooh.
This is one of those one-sided battles.
Sorry, Cardinals.
Yeah. And, you know, now, there was a win recently. They did win in 2020.
Right.
So, you know, there are some people in that community who are like, I think that was the last time Marion Local lost, and it was in the playoffs.
Do you guys like it when coaches go for two to try to end the game to win it?
Against the defending state runner-up who are undefeated and top.
I do.
Yep, yep. I think that was the right call to make.
Right.
And the play was there too. Somebody told me what the play was and how it kind of all went down, and it was there. It just seems like came up a little bit short.
My kids are going to know that I want them to win. I don't want to settle for anything other than a win.
As much as I want to believe in New Bremen, I don't think they're able to win this one. And mainly, it's more about a belief in Marion Local. Until someone beats them, I'm not going to ever think that
they
can
lose again.
Exactly. They're bearing down on the all-time Ohio record that Delphi St. John's currently holds. That's in the upper 50s. If they finish the season undefeated, they will own that record.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, as much as, you know, that stuff doesn't usually come into the minds of Marion Local, I do think that that's on the radar down there. They're not going to have a hiccup here. I think that the defense for New Bremen will keep this one close. I think it'll be a lot closer than people probably anticipate, but ultimately Marion Local wins this one.
Let me ask you this, Nate. If it's a two-score game, is that a moral victory for New Bremen?
It should be.
Right. That's where I'm going.
I mean, without a doubt.
You tell your kids, look, we just took them toe-to-toe.
Yep. And you're not going to see a more difficult team in the playoffs, so let's go.
Hey, moral victories are nice, but they're still L's.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, myself and Darren Gilbert have a big one this weekend. Bell Fountain at Indian Lake. And the notes here say, Danny, try not to drool all over Tavian St. Clair.
It's weird. None of us knew that you were going to do this game, Danny. This is such a shock. We're hearing about this for the first time.
Yeah, and no, I didn't have to give Nick any money for this. So, guys, look, we all know Tavian St. Clair, the number one player, not in the state of Ohio, the number one player in America. Guys, Miles knows my love for this kid. He is a special athlete. We've not seen anything like this in a long time. You look at his stats, guys. First off, he's 6'4", 228 pounds. He's 53 of 84, guys, for 945 yards, 11 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. You watch him play. You know when you see a kid on the field that's Division I, he's different.
Mm-hmm.
when you see the number one player in the country, it's real different.
You think those two interception balls are in someone's house? Because I'd be like, give it here right now. That's going home with me. Yeah. I intercepted him.
I just took an NFL player.
And I'm going to hold it when he's at the Heisman Trophy ceremony going, look what I did.
Yeah. And guys, it couldn't be a different kind of game. You look at Indian Lake, and they love to run the ball. They go for 163 yards a game. They only pass for 80 a game, guys. This one, I don't want to say it could get ugly, but this one, you know, you better be able to pass the ball a little bit against Bellefontaine.
So Bellefontaine's going to score 40, right?
Oh, easy, yeah.
And Indian Lake's not going to get there, right?
No.
Yeah, and how do you stop Tavian Sinclair? Well, you have to get pressure, right? Indian Lake, only 5 sacks all year long. I've only intercepted 3 passes. Now, Danny, if you were playing against Tavian and you intercepted a pass, for 30 years after that, you would be telling everybody, I intercepted Tavian Sinclair.
Weekly, I'm telling everybody. Yeah. Weekly.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I think it's a little different. How are you going to beat Tavian Sinclair? Don't let Tavian Sinclair have the ball. And at least Indian Lake has that in their game script, right? Like, they're a running team.
Yeah.
We talk about it with St. Mary's. Now, it didn't stop them from losing this last week, right, having the ball for 33 minutes of gameplay. But that's going to have to be Indian Lake's, you know, MO. If they're going to try to keep themselves in this one and give themselves a chance, they're going to have to grind the clock. They're going to have to speed this game up and keep Tavian Sinclair off the field as much as they possibly can.
He's one of those guys, when you're watching film, I always say that they have a force field, meaning that they're almost you can't tackle him, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, remember Terrell Pryor when he played? You know, he just would run around guys. People would fall off him. They have a force field. Tavian Sinclair, same type of guy. He's Terrell Pryor, but can throw the football.
Absolutely. And you look at Indian Lake and Madden Lowe, the quarterback. He's 29 of 58 for 322 yards. They don't throw the ball a lot, as I said, but he does run the ball effectively. And then Drake Cosby, the running back, he's got 273 yards and 4 touchdowns. He averages 68 yards a game. They're going to have to put up much bigger numbers to be able to keep the ball on the field and score. Look, Indian Lake wins this game if it's 21-17. You know,
right.
They don't win this thing at 40 to
Like, they win this game, you know, by Tavian not coming.
Let's just be honest.
I missed the bus.
I'm not gonna start the broadcast out Friday night with that at all.
Well, you know, it could be one of those situations too where a guy catches a pass and it gets stripped out from behind, and Indian Lake gets a break.
They're gonna
really
need a turnover
or
two.
Cyrus Cummins, a linebacker for them, fantastic with 11 tackles per game. It's gonna take, you know, the perfect game for Indian Lake to win on Friday.
They've got a kid by the name of Braylon Newcomb, 33 receptions this year, 641 yards and 10 touchdowns. That's what he didn't have last year. He's got a go-to number one receiver, and they're just exploding.
He nukes them.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Charles River, dedicated to improving life by discovering new therapies and cures for devastating diseases. We are a strong supporter of our local community, as well as educational opportunities in science, technology, engineering, and math throughout Allen County region. Learn more about Charles River at criver.com. Hulker Drywall and Plastering. Hulker Drywall is a family-owned company that is focused on giving every customer the personal attention that they deserve. Utilizing a local workforce, Hulker Drywall is dedicated to bringing a professional atmosphere to any commercial or residential job site and is committed to a safe working environment for its employees and customers.
All right, guys, great high school football segment, but let's go up to the big boys. Let's talk National Football League. Miles, who has impressed you through 2 weeks, either a player or a team? Tell me who it is.
It's got to be the Saints, right? They scored on 14 straight drives with Derek Carr at quarterback. Who would have thought before the season that they would be that prolific on the offensive side of the football? The Saints are a scary team right now.
Yeah, they've been doing a good job. For me, it's been Baker Mayfield. I know there's as Cleveland Brown fans in the area, you know, there's been a lot of jokes going back and forth, but only because of what he's been able to do down in Tampa Bay. He has looked really good. He's back to that Baker that I think everybody thought he had the potential of being. He looks comfortable. He's moving that offense well. He has playmakers around him. I've really enjoyed watching him these first 2 weeks.
That running touchdown against the Lions that he had, that was all grits and gut and determination, wasn't it?
Yep.
That was fun to watch.
For me, it's J.K. Dobbins. Seeing J.K. Dobbins, what he was at Ohio State. I'm telling you right now, when J.K. Dobbins signed with the Chargers and they hired Jim Harbaugh, he had to be throwing a party for himself. This is exactly the kind of offense that this kid needs to run in.
Yep.
We make fun of Jim Harbaugh all we want, but you said it best. The guy just wins. and they run the football and they win. And J.K. Dobbins, if he stays healthy, he's going to have a monster year.
Something about Jim Harbaugh being an ex-quarterback, right? You think his teams for years would be throwing the football. But that guy knows how to implement running offenses, doesn't he? Yeah. Everywhere he goes, Stanford, even at San Diego before that and at Michigan, running the football is a mindset, and he brings it.
Yeah. What's the most surprising thing to you so far through 3 weeks?
The Tom Brady and how bad he is as a commentator, right? Is it bad that I take joy in it, right? I mean, he was...
Well, it's good to know that he's human, right? Yeah. He can be finally bad at something.
And what is really
thankfully
cool is the guys from WSN are critiquing the major guys.
Oh, yeah. Because we're like, oh, they're going to call us next, right? Yeah.
Nick's like, I can't lose these guys.
I'm confident saying I'm better at Tom Brady right now, but I make nothing close to what Tom Brady makes.
Nate and I are...
No. That's just a kickback that Danny gets from Waynesfield when he goes over.
Nate, what's the most surprising thing for you so far?
You know, to me, it's been this big move, and we've seen this kind of slowly coming into play, but I think over these first 2 weeks, we've really seen it. It's the move, offense is going back to a run-heavy offense and getting away from passing the ball. You know, forever it's been the five wide, throw the ball around, score the points, excitement, blah, and you've seen this shift. The running back position lost importance for so long. You saw wide receivers getting drafted in the top five, getting away from getting running backs. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're putting the running backs back into play. They're vitally important to what these offenses do. And if you don't have a good running back, your team is not doing well right now.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, too, if the fullback makes a resurgence in the NFL, right?
Ron Broadnax, bring him back.
Right.
To me, guys, it's and every time I do this, I kick myself in the butt. I underestimate Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Every time I do this, here they are, 2-0. Now, are they ugly wins? Yeah, but they're still 2-0, and they put themselves in a position to be on top of the AFC North. Every year, I keep thinking they're going to falter, they're going to be at the bottom, and here they are on top of the division.
Why you got to do this? come on, man. But like, he's right here.
He doesn't listen to anything I say.
Go Steelers.
Nate, in your opinion, why is scoring down in the NFL?
I think it's honestly just what I just said, right? I think that this move to running has slowed that scoring down. And then when they do pass it, the offensive lines in the league are horrible. I am not seeing the investment in the offensive lines that I think that we've seen. I don't know if it's coaching. I don't know if it's a talent pool issue. But you watch these games, and these offensive lines just do not look very good for the majority of the teams. Well, what does that result in? Not having the ball for very long, no long-sustained drives, you know, a lot of turnovers, quarterbacks getting hurt. Teams have got to start realizing that instead of paying $900 million to your wide receiver and quarterback combo, you better start investing in the people who protect them.
This will be interesting because he's a big Bengals fan, and they got that
problem. I can't imagine why I possibly feel that way.
Well, because you guys got that tough decision with Chase at receiver, right?
It's not a tough decision. Just pay him.
Okay, so you pay him. $42 million, and he said, no, that's not enough per year. So you pay him a little bit more, and you're paying your quarterback a ton of money. How are you paying that offensive line that you said that we need to start taking and making sure it's a big priority?
You figure it out. Listen, if I had the answers, I'd be running the team. I'm just saying, you can't, you know.
You're not Mr. Brown.
I'm not Mr. Brown. That's
guys,
right.
In my opinion, and we've talked about this quite a bit, it's what they did a couple years ago when the NFL devalued the running back. Everything went to a quarterback-driven league. When you devalue the running back, then you make teams one-dimensional. And I think scoring is down because defenses are getting faster, bigger, better, and I think they're starting to figure out the offenses. I really do.
But that's why they're also going back.
And I was going to go with that. Like, when you said that, that triggered in my mind that maybe that's why they're going back to getting guys like J.K. Dobbins and guys like Derrick Henry are extending their careers.
I'll tell you why scoring is down. It has to do with offensive play callers. They ask, you guys both said it, offensive linemen, if you're going to pick the best athletes on the field, they're not the offensive linemen, right? However, offensive coordinators will time and time again ask, and Danny, we talked during the week before this podcast, the Browns and the Jaguars, right? What did the Jaguars ask their offensive tackles to do to Myles Garrett? Block them one-on-one over time. Watch the Steelers and the Broncos last week. asked them to block TJ's Watt one-on-one on the edge. It's not going to happen, right? It's not going
to
work.
Same thing in the right. Lions game. That's Aiden Hutchins went crazy.
4.5 sacks, right?
What happened to the linebacker? What happened to the tight end chipping, helping out?
You get all these guys who have their Denny's menu with 80,000 plays on it, right? And they got to show everybody how smart they are because we got to send five receivers out. And I got to have my quarterback put up video game numbers because I'm an offensive genius and I want everybody to see it, as opposed to doing what your talent allows you to do, right? If you have a tackle that can't block Watt or Myles Garrett, use a tight end. Go max protection. Here's an idea. Only send three out on a route and max protect. Those are the things that you don't see in the NFL anymore.
You know, so I read this sheet wrong. When you sent it out and you sent us the show sheet for today, Miles, I was reading through it, and we get to this segment and the questions that we're going to things that we're going to talk about. At the bottom is, you know, you say the things that you how you're going to answer,
right?
But it's right underneath, in your opinion, why is scoring down? And I read it and I'm like, so he thinks scoring down because of the Saints, because Tom Brady's such a horrible commentator? I'm like, what is Tom Brady being a bad commentator? I was like, it's so bad. People guys are like, yeah, we're not scoring anymore until you get rid of him. We're done. We can't handle it.
Turn the game off.
I support that.
I was like, I can't wait to hear this.
All right, guys, let's get down to the junior circuit. Let's talk a little college football, and let's talk about our Ohio State Buckeyes. After 3 weeks of the season, Nate, are there any Big Ten teams that concern you besides Ohio State? We always say that if Ohio State loses, they're going to have to – they'll beat themselves. Any Big Ten teams?
Yeah, actually, Nebraska is starting to scare me, guys.
That's who I have.
I tell you what, that is a different feel down there, right? Raiola is looking really good.
Doesn't look like a freshman, does he?
Nope, they are feeling themselves over there. Looks like Pat Mahomes. Huh, that's weird.
That's weird.
But, you know, I think that Matt Rhule is doing a great job down there. There's a lot of confidence running through there. That is all of a sudden a very scary matchup for Ohio State as Nebraska is going to want to make their mark. Matt Rhule is putting a lot of emphasis on that game to show that Nebraska is back. And I think that Ohio State really has to circle that one. And the other one is, it wouldn't be potentially until the Big Ten Championship, but it's USC. I think that a matchup against USC in that Big Ten Championship should be a scary matchup for the Buckeyes.
I'm with you on USC. I think they go up to the Big House this weekend, and I think they have no trouble with Michigan.
I agree.
They win that one easy. I will caution you on Nebraska a little bit. I'll push back on that one because, I mean, everybody says, oh, they're great because who'd they beat? Colorado, Colorado is playing without an offensive line. So
it's an interesting strategy they're trying. They're like, let's see if this works. We just won't block
just
anybody.
Hike the ball,
we also won't tackle anybody. Yeah. We'll see if this pays off.
And also, I'm predicting that Illinois is going to beat Nebraska this weekend because Illinois terrifies me. We talk about how would Ohio State lose. Nate mentioned this earlier when we were talking about high school football. Don't let them have the football. Running the football, right?
Right.
Illinois, old school.
Yeah,
we're going to punch you in the mouth with Bielema's Wisconsin philosophy. If Illinois keeps running the football and playing great defense, could you imagine Ohio State trying to win a 17-14 game because we don't have the football because Illinois is running it?
I'm not losing the Illibuck to Illinois.
That's a huge trophy, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, there was so much that just went through my head when you said Illinois, and I started getting flashbacks, and I started seeing the number one team going down.
Oh, juice.
It all just started flooding back. I tried to push it right out of my head.
I kind of like Nebraska, too, but here's the thing with Nebraska. It's the numbers game. The quality of depth at Ohio State will be far more superior than what they have in Nebraska. Now, the biggest thing that Nebraska did since Matt Rhule's been there is get a commitment from the number one player in the country, Dylan Raiola. That is huge.
Well, I think in that game, I think it'll come down to if Nebraska comes out and they have success right away, we're in trouble. If they have any confidence in that game, it's going to be.
I just think with attrition, I don't know that they can play four quarters of football with the kind of athletes we have. But we'll see.
What position does attrition play?
He's the left tackle. All right, Miles, let me ask you this. You have to pick either Quinshon Judkins or Travion Henderson to play as your running back on the game-winning drive. You're picking which one?
Well, number one, it's a great choice, right?
Oh, my gosh. How did it go wrong?
Yeah, right. But I'm going to go with Henderson because do you remember the blitz pickup where he stoned that guy? You're going down. You're going to be pass-heavy on a game-winning drive. Defense coordinators are going to start bringing guys. He is a really – complete running back, especially because if you can't pick up blitz, you're not getting drafted in the NFL, right? He has shown that he can pick up the blitz.
Yeah, so I'm going the other way. I'm picking Judkins. And honestly, they're both super talented. I think they both will help you, but it's for one simple reason. I trust that Judkins won't get hurt halfway down the drive and have to come out of the game.
Great. I mean, it's true, isn't it?
The concern with Henderson is always that durability, and will he be able to be a three down every day and back and all these things? And, you know, I think right now, at least, I trust Judkins a little bit more with that than I do Henderson.
He might just go on a first play.
Yeah, look,
if I have two equal backs like this and they're both the quality of these two backs, you can't go wrong either. But on the game-winning drive, I'm going to go with the senior. Judkins is a junior. I'm going to go with the senior on this one. You know,
Doesn't matter. Both gone next year, right?
Well, I know. Yeah. But, yeah, exactly. So, all right, big noon kickoff. Good or bad?
You have to watch it to know, right?
That is mean. That's the best answer today.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
I guess that's the answer.
I mean, I really don't know. I don't watch it. Like, it's not. If I'm going to watch one of these kickoff shows, it's turn on game day, not turn on big noon.
Well, what about having the big game at noon? Because that's what Fox does, right? They put that big game at noon. What do you think about that, Nate? Having that big game at noon?
I love that.
Do you?
Yes. Okay. I think, you know, that's what football is to me. I think that you have one marquee game that should be your 8 o'clock kickoff game that the entire country is watching. Everybody else is noon or 3:30. The noon games get all the prime time. 3:30 are your secondary, and that 8 o'clock game is the one game in the entire country that everybody wants to see. That's how it should be. It bothers me that it's not forever, right?
Yep, right. Yep. What do you think, Dan?
Well, I'll say this: I've watched CBS's coverage the last couple weeks of the Big Ten, and it's awful compared to the SEC. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. It's the matchups. Look, every Saturday for the last 25 years, if I get in watching Big Ten football, I'm watching CBS for an SEC matchup, and I'm getting great games, like just great games. Mm-hmm. And we're getting Purdue getting beat by Notre Dame by 67, whatever the score was. But big noon kickoff, they're still competing with College Game Day. Yeah. They're all trying to knock off the champ, and ESPN College Game Day is. But I think Big Noon does a great job. They have villains. They have good guys.
I really don't even know who's on that broadcast.
Well, Urban Meyer, Brady Quinn.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they do a bad job. I'll give them a 7 out of 10. How about that?
I think it's a great show because Urban Meyer will give you great analysis, right? He just doesn't say stuff like, oh, they got their swag, right? Why are they going to win? They got their swag back. Yeah. I hate when they do that stuff. Urban will give you in-depth analysis from a coach's perspective, and you just don't get that on other things. Yeah. Plus, there is no Desmond Howard. There is no Desmond Howard on this show, right? Yeah. So that's a win for me. Now, the game's being kicked off at noon. If it's a big game and it's Ohio State, absolutely hate it. I can't stand it unless it's Michigan. Yeah. I would rather kind of salivate over all day long, knowing we're kicking off at night, having a night game. Ohio State, even when they play the whiteout at Penn State, you thought about it all day long. Yeah. It's a big-time moment. It's the marquee matchup for everybody on that day. So I'd rather kick off at 7:30.
Mm. I guarantee that the Buckeyes will what, Miles?
I got two, actually.
Oh,
I guarantee they will beat Oregon.
You only get one.
And that clown show up in Ann Arbor when we play the third week or fourth week in November, we will definitely destroy that team up north.
So I got two as well.
Yeah,
and I didn't until just now, but I just made one up.
It's the Dave Bowen rule.
That's right.
So I guarantee, and I'm really going on a limb on here, fellas, so you guys can hold me accountable. Oh, okay, if I get this wrong.
I'm writing.
But I guarantee you that Ohio State covers against Marshall.
Okay, I like that.
I guarantee they cover against Marshall, and I guarantee at some point this year Will Howard will lose us a game, and I'll be super angry. And you guys will all have to admit that I was right about Will Howard. I can't wait.
No Grippos, Will Howard chips for you.
I guarantee you that the Buckeyes will beat TTUN this year. Lock it, stock it, whatever you have to do. And I have another one too. I guarantee you the Buckeyes will have another game in the shoe after the Michigan game.
Oh, I like that.
That will be interesting.
That would be really cool.
This whole thing.
Guys,
will,
yeah, we, if that so happens, we got to go.
It'll be
we
the hottest
gotta
ticket ever.
Oh, right? I know, right? Yeah. Yeah. Nate's got cash. He'll pay.
Media credentials, right?
That's right, Nick. Hook us up. That's right.
You know what I'd love?
Yeah.
If we got a home game and it was against an SEC team and it's like 0 degrees. Hayes in the horseshoe. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Be awesome. Yeah. And I'm not even going to go with your next one. Should Marshall even show up?
No.
Of course not.
No,
of course not.
Yeah, they should. What's wrong with you guys? They get seven figures for just walking through the door.
That's a good point.
Why
That's
would
a good
you turn
point.
Down seven figures? Yes, they should show up.
All right, guys. Our last segment of the night, maybe the best segment we all look forward to, our Power 5 football teams in Northwest Ohio. Go ahead, Miles. You start first.
All right. So Marion Local.
What?
They're going to make it. What? Yeah, they're going to make the
list.
Those
little fellas making your top five?
Coldwater is on there again. I can't not have Columbus Grove on there. Keep winning, right? I'm going to add Bluffton this week because it looks like Columbus Grove and Bluffton are on that collision course yet again this year. Don't forget LCC, though, right? So is it the fifth team? Is it LCC? Is it Bath? Is it Minster? No, it's Coldwater Volleyball. They're the best volleyball team in the area. Undefeated still. They are fantastic.
Nate, your Power 5.
So mine, surprise, Marion Local, Columbus Grove. I think that right now in our area, those are the top two teams for everybody to keep their eyes on. I went with Walpauk, a big win against St. Mary's this past week. They just continue to look better and better and better. I've had Bluffton on my list for 3 weeks now. They're not going anywhere.
Right.
And then my last is who I think is going to pull off a victory this weekend, and that's Minster. I think the Minster Wildcats coming in at 5. I love what Steffi brings to that team. I think that they're incredibly dangerous and overlooked, and that makes the team even that much more dangerous.
Yeah, my number one team, are you ready for this? It's Marion Local.
No.
I lost
that bet with myself. Jeez.
They've won a few games down in Mercer County. They're pretty
good. I got lucky
good.
52 times.
Yeah. fellas, I got Wapakoneta. I think they're the class of the WBL. I think they're on a collision course, for another WBL title. So I've got Grove. I think they're the class of the Northwest Conference. And I think that they, again, a collision course with Bluffton. I think both of them are going to come into that game undefeated. Can't wait for that one. I've got Coldwater and I've got Bluffton, so pretty much same top five as everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting to the halfway point here of the high school season, and
so
teams
fast.
Are really starting to establish themselves, and the class of these conferences are really starting to come to the top, and it's making this segment a little bit easier because frankly the teams that we identified early, they just keep right on rolling.
Yeah. So another three wise men from WSN, the podcast. I want to thank my guys here, Nate Garlock, Miles Holiday, Kelsey Beimer, Nick Fraley. I want to thank our sponsors, Charles River and the Hawker Drywall and Plastering Company. Guys, let's do it again next week.
How great was Jim Epperly, too?
Oh, Jim Epperly was fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Good call. Yeah, so let's do it again next week.
Let's do it.
I won't be here. We'll have a fill-in next week. I got some soccer games I got to go to, so scheduling didn't work out real well.
Kick it far,
kick it far.
But I'll be back with you guys here in 2 weeks.
Thanks, everybody.